The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 18th of May, 2020. On the podcast today, Andrew Pollaer, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources. And Andrew discusses their fundraise, metallurgical tests, and provides a general update. Also on the podcast, Paul Hill, full-time investor and equity analyst, gives his view on the market, what he's been buying and selling. And we also talk about BT at an all-time low, but the CEO is buying and the chairman's buying. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about African Airtel, Capita, Blue Prism, and Bluefield Solar Income Fund. And, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We can also see our COVID-19 index. 28 stocks, all sort of positively facing this COVID issue. And they could be actually trading strongly because they're either, you know, joining in the fight against coronavirus, or their business model is such that it benefits from the way we're living now, remote working, all that kind of stuff. So check that out at foxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Pollaer, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources. VAST is ticker there. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Hope lockdown's treating you well.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I've said to quite a few people, I've been in lockdown for like 5 years, I think. I didn't realise it. I'm self-isolating. But you've been busy. You're keeping busy yourself there. I mean, you've done metallurgical work at BP there, and you've just done a subscription to Rage just under £1 million. We'll dig into that and what it's all about in a bit. But as always, Andrew, if someone's listening and has never heard of Vast Resources or not familiar with Vast Resources, just give them a brief summary as to what it's all about, please.
Certainly. Vast Resources is a multi-commodity, multi-jurisdictional company that has been heavily involved in mining since 2006. It started as an exploration company, went into producer. Of late, in the last 2 years, we've restructured the business with our primary focus on the Bay Supply Mine in Romania and also the Chiadzwa Heritage Concession, in a community concession in Zimbabwe, which is they're the two primary focus, but we've still got all of our other assets, exploration and production assets in Romania and in Zimbabwe, which will come online. But the focus of the business now is near-term cash flow, and at the moment we're very near.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, first of all, let's go back to last week, last Friday, in your metallurgical test work. For people not familiar, don't know how to read through that, what was the results there, Andrew?
Well, the results were actually extremely promising. We've been very conservative in our modelling due to the inconsistencies in some of the historical data that we had on Baeta. We've always known it was a high-grade copper, gold, lead, zinc and molybdenum and silver mine. And as I said, we didn't have access to a lot of data because still a lot of the historical results are still subject to what they call secret service in Romania. So the only way to prove it and to actually be able to take it to market is to do it yourself. So we've relied on the historical data to get to Baeta where it is. And we're talking about a mine that has $60, $70 million worth of infrastructure at least in there. But all in all to date, including holding charges, acquisition costs and so on, have been sub $10 million. And we're going to be in production by the end of July, as stated, which is within the 6 months of when we did our first finance drawdown with Atlas in end of January this year. And we're still on target for that. Despite COVID, we're still moving ahead and we plan on being in production end of July with first deliveries in August.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I've had a couple of questions in from investors, shareholders there. So I don't know if you can cover these off. Obviously, maybe some of them you can't answer. We'll fire them to you anyway. So the first one is, can you clarify in regards to BP the position with Atlas as they are trying to refinance to save dilution? How likely is it you'll be successful as per the RNS on Friday?
Well, nothing's changed. When we took on the Atlas facility, it was a combined facility to enable us to borrow money for Zimbabwe, which is extremely difficult, as well as to get Baeta up and operational. And the intention was to go with an institution long-term banking partner to refinance the Atlas to avoid dilution for shareholders. So that was always the plan. We haven't changed or varied from that. COVID, we were hoping to accelerate it a little bit faster. It's caused a few delays, but we're still on track to what we said we'd get done within 6 months of drawdown. So the intention was always to avoid dilution where possible. And by doing this, what we're doing now, as far as accelerating the test work based on the test results, the net test results that we published last week, will enable us to do so to avoid as much dilution as possible. So that is the intention of the company, to repay Atlas, and it's always been that way. So nothing has changed, except now we've got an opportunity to get a better finance solution for shareholders, which will add value long term.
Yeah. What would you say to shareholders concerned about the continuous dilution through placings?
Well, I mean, we've got to put it into context. We've got, as I said, we've got an asset that's worth a considerable amount of money. And, you know, when you've got an asset that you've only invested $10 million in and you've got a valuation at the moment, the SP Angel report put a fairly conservative valuation of $37 million. That just increased it to $47 million. But when you look at the test results that we've got back now, and the recoveries that are available, you've got to put into context. And I use an analogy for shareholders. If you were to buy a house that was worth £100,000 and you put $20,000 worth of equity and borrowed £80,000, well, the bank's going to look at you and say, oh, we'll lend you 80% of the valuation. Mm-hmm. If you increase that valuation to £200,000 or £300,000 and still only require that £80,000, well, first of all, the banks are going to approve it a hell of a lot faster. Second of all, they're going to give you much better terms. And third of all, you're going to have to provide less peripheral security to enable that to happen. So by accelerating, based on the test work, and they're the first results we've ever had because we couldn't get access to the gold results. That's why we've never reported them historically, except the very old public records. Mm-hmm. And because we couldn't back it up, we had the final results, but we couldn't back it up. And this test work has now said, not only do you have gold in there, but it's a lot better than you anticipated, and the same with the copper. The copper rates that have been reported in those first batch samples are anywhere between 2 and 10 times greater than was originally anticipated. We've always known they're there, but we couldn't say anything about it because we didn't have anything to back it up. Mm-hmm. And these reports cost money, and they cost a hell of a lot of money. I mean, the company historically on Pixton Pier has spent, you know, almost $10 million on reports to get the JORC out of Pixton Pier back in 2012. We've never actually expensed any money on external reports. We were in process of doing the JORC, but coming back with these new grades that have come out of this batch test work, it's in the interest of shareholders to provide a better long-term finance facility and also to increase the valuation of the asset itself, which then will transform into asset value. So for the cost of $1 million, which is the £900,000 we've raised, which the majority of it is going towards this test work, will allow us to increase the value of the asset. And once that JORC is produced, or that third party, and it's not, we don't need to get a JORC to get this finance through. What we need is accelerated test work, which means that we have to put all of this 800 metres of drilling that we're going to put out over time. We're extending that drilling program so it could be 1,000 to 1,500 metres of drilling. Each one of those needs to be cut in half, needs to be crushed, needs to be assayed, and these assay results will be accelerated with this money. And this costs money. So we're not just raising money for the sake of raising money or to keep the lights on. We have that money. We had that money from what we budgeted that before. This is to accelerate and to increase the value, the asset value for shareholders, which in turn will allow us to provide a better financing solution long term for the company.
Yeah.
And it was a very, very difficult decision to make, considering we know and understand the sentiment of shareholders, but the responsibility of the directors and the board of the company and the management of the company is to first and foremost to what is in the best interest of the business. And therefore, that equates to what is in the best interest of the shareholders.
Yeah,
and that was a very difficult decision to make. But the decision was only made on Wednesday or Thursday of last week. It wasn't something that was premeditated. And the fact that the people that did come into that placing were made inside. And then when we explain to them what I'm explaining to you now, I mean, it took literally 3-4 hours to raise that sort of money because of the asset value that will increase, which will then in turn increase the value of the shares itself.
Yeah,
so that's the reason why it was so easy to raise that money.
I understand. And so these further test works are needed for, like I said, put up the asset and get that funding away. But the JORC isn't needed for that. But it is asked here, when will the JORC be completed?
Well, once we've done all this work, I mean, of course, that will assist. And not only that, it will increase the let's say, the value of the JORC, because before the JORC was there, and that's what we're doing at the moment, is the JORC is there for the next 2 to 3 years of production. It's confirming the measured and indicated of what we have for the next 2-3 years. So about 400,000, 1.8 million. Mm-hmm. What this will do is allow us to go into further depth within that JORC and provide, you know, better verification of the work that was in the JORC. So you'll have, instead of measured, indicated, and inferred and exploration, we'll be able to add to either of those categories based on this work. So it'll add value to the JORC as well. But this is the work that we're doing now is not specifically for the JORC itself, but it will also enhance the JORC. So we still plan, once we get all this test work back and the assay results back, they will contribute to the JORC. It all depends on the third-party consultants, because we are outsourcing it for the sake of the institutions. And that should all, most of the work will be done by July, and then we'll continue. And I think it's a 300-400-page report, depending on how fast we can type it up. But we're hoping August, September we'll have the JORC out. But we don't need the JORC for this finance. That's why it hasn't been done in the past, because we had sufficient backup documentation to allow the finance to come through. And the result of these MET tests being as good as they were, we felt it was in the best interest of the company to try and enhance the value of our asset.
Understood. Okay, and another question here, is there any progress on the diamond license in Zimbabwe?
I mean, we've been pretty public with what we can and can't say. Mm-hmm. What I can say is that we still believe that it is going to happen. We have no indication to state otherwise. There have been issues that have been in the press. There's been a lot of press that is inaccurate as well, often the small media in Zimbabwe, but the mainstream media have got it correct. There have been issues within the community. You've got the issue of COVID in Zimbabwe at the moment, where everybody's still on lockdown. We're in constant contact with the authorities in Zimbabwe and with the community, and we still believe it will proceed. It may happen during the COVID lockdown if it's extended. If not, we still believe it will happen after. But we have no doubt in our mind that project is going to proceed.
Marvellous stuff. Okay. And anything else you want updates on before I ask you for the three reasons, Andrew?
Well, I mean, Baiza is well on its way. The second container is arriving at the end of this week. The second shipment. The third shipment will be on the water, I think, at the end of this week. And the very final one will be leaving at the end of this month as well. So it means everything will be on site, as said, as specified earlier in RNSs, in time to get into operation by the end of July. And we're very happy to say that, you know, that will be very near-term free cash for the company. Bates is a very healthy and wealthy mine, and I think it'll be a game-changer for the business and will actually show the true value of the business on only one of its projects.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, I think there were 3 points there. That's excellent, Andrew. If you want to add anything else, go for it. But, you know, if someone's not following the company, Andrew, just give them a couple more reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Well, as I said, multi-jurisdictional, multi-commodity. Very few mines have the wealth of gold, silver, copper, lead and molybdenum sitting in one mine, let alone the other mines that we have in Romania. And also we have the added benefit of working in Zimbabwe in the diamond asset that we also will come online later this year. So we've got, you know, we're covered by all fluctuations in the commodities market within the business. So when one's up, the other one's down, and it should maintain the future cash flow of the business long term.
Marvellous stuff. Andrew, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now with his brand-new headphones, brand-new microphone, is equity analyst and full-time investor Paul Hill. You all right, Paul?
Yeah, thank you, Justin. For the introduction, you should see a picture of me. I look a right elephant here.
I can say you're a professional guy. Do you know what? I like the fact you do lots of research, really in depth, more than most I've know at all. I mean, you do spreadsheets upon spreadsheets. But even though you started coming to the podcast, you decided to get a proper set of headphones, proper mic. I like that, you know? So shows professionalism, Paul.
Well, you gave me so much stick for having this sort of tinny sound, so I thought I'd try and get something with a bit of Dolby.
Yeah, it sounds better. And we were just chatting, right? I tell you what, I haven't told you this. I've bought a little bit of BT for a while, right? I tell you why. For a while, I've had three big stocks, and I haven't gone fully, you know, invested them at all. I've just, and they're more recovery growth stories, and they are sort of Auto Trader, Greggs, and Barrett Development. And I thought, I want another one, more like a utility. And I was looking into the water companies and all this stuff. And then I started seeing some of the director buys on BT recently. I mean, Philip Jansen, CEO, 2 million quid's worth yesterday at 1.10. And I saw BT from the Financial Times is in talks to sell off his Open Reach section of BT. And that could be worth 20 billion. Now, the market cap of BT is 10 billion. 2.3 billion in pre-tax profit. They're on a PE around about 4.5. And I thought, okay, they've cancelled a dividend, going to bring it back next year about 7 pence. At this rate, it's just under 7%. So I thought, do you know what? Are we at the bottom here or not? It's very going to be very close to the bottom. They've piled in. He's got 4 million quid's worth of shares now, Philip Jensen. So I thought, I'm going to take a little step in here, because it's recovering revenue in lockdown mode. It's a utility, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and also they should be a beneficiary of the home working boom, as more and more people sort of like set up their own offices. I mean, all their fixed lines should do really well. People like myself who are upgrading from sort of, you know, BT Plus into sort of full fibre. I mean, it's certainly not the cheapest, but it's the best and most reliable I've found by a mile. And once they say they go full fibre, they'll get a lot more business as well. So the margins should be good. The mobile side, again, is actually a fantastic network. The old EE network, which they bought about 4 or 5 years ago, so they have total coverage.
How much did they buy that for? That was like
I think 15 billion, something like that. It was mid-teens anyway. So you're right, comparing it to 10 billion market cap, which just shows you. I mean, I've got a bit of a story actually. It was my first ever share that I bought BT as a investor. I think they called them SIDs back in the 80s, and I picked up some at about £1.30 when they first did this sort of the release. I sold them for about £8 at the sort of like in 1998 or something like that. So, and I haven't really stepped in since then. But I'm with you. I mean, I know we briefly talked about them last week, and they are really cheap. I mean, you look at the actual EV to EBITDA multiple, and I think I calculated it last week at less than 3x. That's when you even put in all the debt. And certainly when they look at the leverage ratios, I mean, I briefly went through it, and I looked at them, and I thought they were absolutely fine. It was sort of like a 2 or 2.5, I can't remember exactly, of net debt to EBITDA multiple. So they should be absolutely fine. The one thing they've sort of like nudged the dividend down, or they've cancelled it. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah, they've cancelled it the next year, but it's going back at 7 pence, is it? Well, now we're at 1.10 a share. So that's like, it's just less than 7% anyway if it comes back at this level.
Exactly, 7% yield, yeah. So, you know, absolutely fine. But I think they've only done that really on a temporary basis.
Yeah.
Simply because, you know, they've actually got to invest quite a bit into the actual network. Once they've actually been pushed by the government to build out their full fibre, particularly to remote areas, which will be only good for revenue in the long term, but it's poor for cash flow. And the other thing, I mean, there's this long-standing story about Huawei, the Chinese network provider. Now, most of the IP backbone is actually made by Huawei. Yeah. Now, that's less of a problem with the old sort of like, you know, it's a bit technical, but it's called WDM, which is basically the really sort of fast fiber type of stuff. Now, they're upgrading to 5G. And they've been banned from using Huawei, which adds an extra $500 million of extra capex into the equation. So that's really the only reason. So I'm with you. It's a sort of like, this is a temporary issue that actually, you know, basically should be resolved in 18 months to 2 years. And if anything, they're actually going to increase. The only thing there's two things I would say which is not helping them. Yeah. Given sport is off, I'm a subscriber, then they're having to give lots of people discounts like me every month, you know, to what you've actually paid on sport. So that's not great. That's handing money back to consumers. But that's sort of like a short-term pain already included within their cash flows. And the other thing is the massive pension situation. And gross liabilities, I think, were £53 billion when I looked at it, compared to a market cap of 10 or 11 billion. So it is enormous. And all you need, unfortunately, is if you've got the wrong assets in that, and I haven't checked whether they're heavily into sort of like, you know, equities, or alternatively if they've got a mismatch between their bond liabilities, i.e. they're valued on, their liabilities will be valued on an actuarial basis using UK gilts, and if they've tried to neutralize that with AA corporate bonds, then they've got a big spread difference which will shoot up their actual pension recovery payments each year. So you will have, we'll have to work through that. But I'm with you. I mean, I looked at them and thought, this is just ridiculous. It's so damn cheap. A lot of bad news is already priced in. And unless you believe the management are total muppets, which I don't believe they are, then they're trading at £1.05, £1.10, which is an all-time low. I mean, I bought these in 84 at £1.30. Mm. You know, do you really believe BT is going to fall to pieces? And I don't.
Yeah, no. Well, do you know what? This chat is—it's in the Financial Times, and they've been in talks to sell off the Open Reach part. And like I said, Barclays analysts—they value it at $22 billion. You know, and I just think the fact that there's something going. The fact is, I know that sometimes, like you said previously, you can get loans. Some of these guys can get loans. These directors to buy shares, interest-free loans. But he's got almost 4 million quid's worth of shares now, Philip Jansen, CEO. And that's, I don't care.
So he's got half of what you've got.
Yeah. So that's a big chunk in anyone's book. I know he's on a good wage. He's on a good whack. But that's a big chunk. And the fact that he's been buying all the way down, yesterday was his lowest purchase of £1.10, he's going to want to do something here to get the share price going. Because, like I said, these two guys are brand new to the board, pretty much. They've only been a couple of years now, haven't they? So they're going to want to do something drastic here because it's not working out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've got a reasonably long-term time horizon, I think there's minimum downside and just upside. Don't get me wrong, I don't think this is going to rocket. I mean, their growth is not that great still. No. They are pipes, they're not actual content providers. If you had content, then I'd say, fantastic, they're really going to do well. But they'll get extra volume, and I actually think they will, I know that's bizarre being a utility, but I actually think they're going to win market share, given their service and the quality. It's people like me, and people home working, last thing you want is a dodgy flipping fiber provider or something keeps going in and out, and therefore you're prepared to pay over and above the normal rate to get that reliability. So I think they're going to win market share, but I could be wrong. They've been losing market share for years, but yeah. I think they've got a good chance. And if that's the case, I mean, the shares are absolutely a steal.
Yeah, but so look at this. Yeah, right, and the regulatory pressure, right? Openreach's full fibre network covers only 2.6 million homes, but it intends to speed up its build over the coming years to about 3 million a year. So that's a pedal to the floor there, and I think they're going to increase that. But I mean, I just think at the moment, how low can it go? And always, this is very simple. But whenever people look at stocks and shares and look at prices, everyone expects that once it gets below a pound, I'll buy. Or once it gets, sometimes it doesn't actually get that round figure. It just stops before it and starts to go back up. I've seen that so many times. So that's why scaling in is always good. So I'll start now, and if it goes below pass, get in then. But generally, you'll see it doesn't go to that round figure. But anyway.
I mean, how many subscribers does it have for its broadband service?
I don't know.
Okay. 20 million?
Yeah,
something like that. 15, 20 million. So if you just quickly do the maths, then effectively, if you're upgrading all of that base from broadband to fibre, let's say you'd only do 10 million of those. You charge an extra £10 a month on it, Broadbush, extra 120 quid a year or extra 100 quid, on site, an extra 10 million. I mean, that's basically what? That's an extra 100 million of almost like pure profit, isn't it? Or no, it's more than that. Sorry, it's a billion of almost pure profit just from the quality of upgrading your existing broadband providers to full fibre. That's the crown jewel.
Yes. Anyway, listen, apart from BT, have you been looking at anything this week? Have you bought anything more? Have you topped up? Have you sold anything? What's going on?
No, I mean, I've just been sort of kept my hands sort of like, you know, reasonably patient, sit on my hands. I mean, I noticed the market's obviously taken a wobble over the last 2 days, and, you know, they went down by, in the last 48 hours, went down by 5.5%, and there was a bit of like, oh my God, here we go again type of syndrome.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty relaxed. I mean, I looked at the numbers, and you look at the debt markets, they're pretty relaxed as well, haven't spiked at all. Spreads against treasuries over the US or against gilts haven't moved. The medical side, if anything, has got better, because, you know, people are talking about, you know, the vaccines coming, you know, coming through, and the antivirals, and there's a lot of positive view on Regeneron's antibody antiviral coming in September or in the fall. So
Roche's antibody tests, you know, exactly.
So there's a lots of positive medical news. The bond markets have just taken it absolutely no problem whatsoever. So all this is a bit of a wobble, and in my view, what's generated over the last two days is that you had Jerome Powell, who was that Fed, you know, Fed chair, who came out, and he basically said that the US needs to do some more when the existing $3 trillion of fiscal stimulus run out at the end of June or July. And so what's the, what the market's doing? It's doing what it did before. You know, when you push the cop back to the great financial crisis, you look at TARP, you look at basically Operation Twist, you look at the taper tantrum, the market's just bully central bankers into doing things, and they're going to do the, they're doing it the same. So this is just really the market's telling the Fed to and the Congress to basically pull its finger out and look at a fiscal stimulus plan post the existing plan when it finishes. And the same thing has happened to Rishi Sunak in the UK as the Chancellor, because, you know, his furlough package finishes at the end of June, you know, for businesses, the salary furlough plan, 80%. But because of consultations, then companies need forewarning so that they won't sack everybody as of today. And therefore, he had to come out and preempt it. So I hate to say it, it's basically markets telling central bankers what to do. And that's all it is this is just a little wobble at saying, look, get Congress up and operational, and they'll get them, and they'll get the message, and they'll toe the line, which is what's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. There's no way in a presidential year Congress are just going to pull the plug and just let millions and millions of businesses in the States just fail simply because we're not quite out of the recovery period yet.
Yeah, well, exactly. They can't, because, as I said, I don't know who it was, but said. People have just turned up to work. All of a sudden, one day, the government have had to shut down the economy, you know? And all of a sudden, a lot of businesses are struggling. They may not come back. So you can't put that the blame at the foot of the guy, the worker who used to turn up every day, he's a good worker, and all of a sudden he's out of a job. And I was saying, sooner or later, I feel sentiment changing now. And I did a little poll today saying, is the cost of this lockdown been too much? Because I looked at the figures.
What was the answer?
Well, at the moment, majority saying yes, because 36 million Americans now, initial jobless claims, 36 million. Now, if you look at the global total death from coronavirus, it's 300,000, right? So 118 times as many people have claimed for jobs, unemployment in America than has died globally. And if you look at the stats, I know we go back to this, but the whole point of shutting down the economy was to let the NHS, to flatten that curve, let the NHS cope with it. We've got that in place now. They can prepare. We built these hospitals. We got all the kit. The PPE's there. Hopefully, it's all there. Got antivirals come in. Now we have to unlock the economy because it's costing so much money. It is scary. I said more people died from HIV this year than the thing. You're more likely to commit suicide than be killed by coronavirus. And do you know what? Even more so if you're below 60 and you don't have a pre-existing health condition. So when you see this amount of unemployment happening and trashing the economy, we've got to get it back going now. Yes, with precautions, social distancing, we know how you can catch it now. Beforehand, we sort of didn't, and it was flying around like wildfire. But now we can limit, and we may have to look at localised areas, hotspots, and shut those down rather than the entire economy. You know, because in London, do you see the R rate is now below 1 apparently, which is very good. And so that's the way we're going to have to work it. You know, I think literally localise it and find out where hotspots are and shut those down rather than the entire country, because it's costing so much, you know, and we've got to get back to work. It's going to have a long-term problem otherwise, you know.
Yeah, I mean, have you thought about actually stepping in as an MP or putting yourself up for Parliament there, Justin, because you'd get my my vote.
I'm too truthful. I'm too truthful. That's the trouble. No. I just think, you know.
Well, hey, I'm with you. Yeah, I mean, you look at the economic cost.
Yeah.
We've got to take risk either way. If we don't take risk, the downside is enormous. And I think we've discussed it just between me and you, and we both believe, I certainly do anyway, that because we've got the extra capacity, because we've got the medical solutions, we're going to get through the second wave. It'll be tight, but even without a vaccine, we're going to get through it. And on that case, we've just got to basically get the economy up and operational. And baby steps, that's fine. Let's see how we get on. I mean, what's also encouraging is that, you know, Rishi Sunak, as I say, has extended this furlough program for another 4 months. And what I found is positive about that is that he can.
Yeah.
You know, he feels as though he's got the finance power to actually do it. And given that's going to go to the end of October, that will go past the second wave. And that's the big test. Once we get through that, I think we're almost home and dry. I know you hear people saying doom-mongers that we're going to get a massive third wave in January or in the winter months, etc. But I don't believe that, and I actually think, you know, we'll be okay by that stage.
And as long as we, you know, the precautions are there, like we know now, washing your hands, staying away from people as much as you can, not allowing big crowds of people, and almost like, you know, finding companies that aren't putting in place these kind of precautions, you know, stickers up there encouraging it, and even subsidising companies that have been hit but are doing, like for example, restaurants. Let's say they're gonna get, you know, you can only now have a half the amount of people in a restaurant, and so even subsidising those kind of businesses, because that would, they'd still get tax take, you know, going from no tax income to some is better. So maybe even subsidising businesses until we get a vaccine, rather than just shutting it all down, you know, it would help.
Yeah.
I think it's a half measure.
So,
are you looking? Are you on? Is your finger over the buy button on any stocks or topping up at the moment or not?
No, not really.
If so, why not? What are you waiting for? You think it's another down dip? What's going on?
Well, I mean, one of the companies that I cover, or not cover, but basically I invested in, is Alecosoft, and that came out results on Monday. That did very well. Yeah. I mean, absolutely in line. I mean, just to give you a recap, I mean, basically they do the end-to-end build tech software for large construction and house building firms. So there's the clever design, the project planning, the operation, the maintenance, the full sort of like 75-year end-to-end, you know, lifespan of these projects. They're sort of like their iconic projects. They've got the BBC Television Centre, they've got the Shard, they've got Hong Kong International, they've got a massive, and they sort of like 80% to 90% of all these sort of main construction firms. They came out with good results. The cash generation was outstanding. I mean, 120% cash conversion, absolutely flabbergastingly good. So financially wise, they're as safe, I wouldn't say that, but the safest houses. You've just got to sort of like try and get the growth going. And if the organic growth rate can actually pick up to sort of like, you know, mid or high or even low double digit type rates, then I could see the shares double. And importantly, none of that has actually been priced into the stock, in my view. It's all upside. So as the house builders now have started to, you know, and the construction firms have started to go back on site, I think things are going to start improving in that respect. I am on the hunt for, you know, for other stocks, and I will be buying. But again, I'm being selective. I've got a positive outlook. A lot of people, you know, some very, very smart investors are bleak and very negative, and they think there's going to be a vaccine in 18 months, 2 years at the earliest, and we're going to go into, you know, depression, Armageddon mode. I mean, these guys are not stupid. So all I would say to investors is there is a large, wide range of possible outcomes. You need to be able to get through all of them, your portfolio. So don't bet on any one particular outcome. Personally, I believe there's a better than 50% chance that we're going to get through the second wave, which means that we're not going back into lockdown. And that's the critical bit, because that will drive the volatility in the bond market. As long as that stays stable, the economy will recover and the equity market will recover. And as you sensibly have already done, you know, as long as you invest in businesses that are going to survive the short term problems, as you know, in the intermediate, and you know, potentially can benefit on the other side of a social deficit world, like BT, for instance, or any other sort of like IT type business, then you should be absolutely fine. It's, you know, you just got to have a reasonably long time frame and time horizon. The markets are rational at the moment, which means there actually isn't that many good bargains going around. I mean, if you really want to throw the dice, you can go into cruise liners. I'm not doing that yet because I don't really believe they're going to start immediately. You go into airlines again, that's a really challenged area. And dining is a leap of faith that the government is going to subsidize them for as long as, you know, the social distancing rules are in place. So I think it's staying into those areas that are cheap and can win in a social distancing world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, do you know what? I looked the other day at the top, well, the FTSE 100, the biggest losers over the last, what was it, six months? Six months. And it was TUI is the biggest loser, 74% down. Yeah. Carnival is 72%, is IAG 67%, Rolls-Royce down 66%. So it's almost like going through those things, you know, EasyJet 60%. Which ones will recover quickly? I think, to be honest, I know there's a lot of debt in Carnival stuff and whatever, but I think cruise liners are probably, I look at those more favourably than airlines at the moment, because I just think there's more space on a cruise liner than in a plane, you know, where you can't really...
I did see actually Ryanair putting some air filters on there. Jets, so
he'll try anything, Michael will try anything to convince people is safe, but I just think, to a certain extent, I think sentiment will change once we get the R figure down. You're realizing you can contaminate, you know, less than one person, then there'll be less of a hysteria about, and sentiment will change to a certain extent. And as long as you be sensible, you know, wash your hands and all that stuff, keep a distance as much as you can, doesn't necessarily have to be 2 meters, as long as someone's not coughing and breathing over you, then it is, you know, be sensible with it. And I think, you know, as long as you see those figures coming down, then there's not the, I heard still somewhere saying we could be up to 25% of people could be infected already, you know, so we don't know how high that is. It could be a lot higher than that. This could be around a couple of months before we even knew about it, you know. So
I would say what is also quite good and has been really positive over the last few weeks is that the equity fundraising markets have really opened. There's a lot of businesses that have actually been able to raise money at actually not disastrous prices either. We saw it last week, and we've seen it again this week.
Boom,
and
raised about
But also, you know, businesses that are actually quite challenged have been able to raise money. So that's obviously a positive, that people, there are sufficient money around to be able to, you know, to see these businesses through to the other side. What's been also quite interesting, a lot of them actually have been convertible debt. So effectively, that's not that always great for existing shareholders, but it's something to be aware of, because what happens is the bondholders basically put in a lower interest rate debt and then get a kicker on the warrants. So you've just got to be careful you don't get further diluted. One thing I would say is that, you know, stay disciplined. Don't go off-piste. And it's when you go off-piste, you really sort of like cancer. For if you have a winning strategy, you stick to it. And whether that's stock picking, whether that's asset allocation, whatever. And the other area to watch out for, which is absolutely not out of the woods and really hasn't yet been hit, is emerging markets. And the reason why I raise a red flag on those guys is that they're just in the sort of crosshairs of that first wave or just starting up. They haven't got the medical infrastructure to be able to sort of like sort it out. They certainly haven't got the financial infrastructure to get businesses to the other side. And a lot of them have got dollar denominated debt. And what I mean by that is that their currencies are devaluing and the dollar's strengthening. Yeah. So you get that horrible triple or quadruple whammy of a depreciating currency. You get sort of a flight of foreign investors who then decide, actually, no, this is not great. And then you get an absolute shocking, you know, deficit by the governments. Mm. And the areas that I would really highlight to me look awful, big markets in emerging markets, is Turkey, Brazil. I'll tell you, Russia's not looking great either. And these are massive. China should be fine because it's just got so much sort of like, you know, foreign currency. But is, you know, Asia again not good? India, I mean, wow. They have, you know, they've basically been able to say, they've said we can't do lockdown because it's killing people because of hunger. But that means the debt levels are all going to come, you know, home to roost. So if you go off-piste into places like emerging markets and throw the dice on risk, don't be surprised if you catch that falling knife, because some of the stuff, I think you've just got to be careful. On a positive bias, which me and you are there, you've just got to basically select businesses that are going to survive and are going to benefit, rather than stuff that actually may survive if you're lucky. And coming back to my original point, there's lots of different scenarios. Just in your own mind, put down what the sort of three or four key scenarios could be, from really good to really bad and in between, and what the percentages are of that, you know, as in like percentages, what you feel comfortable with, and then basically invest off the back of that sort of expected outcome, you know, of where you're going to do. So you cover all bases. Personally, I'm trying to avoid anything which is a low probability, even though it might have a very high outcome, because that tends to be a trash rally and it goes horribly wrong very quickly.
Yeah, but you know what? Just finish on that. I look at that, and you should always try and look at the chances of the probability side, and look at what's the chances of this happening, the chance that happening. Is it probable, possible, or is it impossible? And even if you break it down in those three sections, and even if you look at a chart and look at where is the share price at the moment, is it right at the top, or is it in the middle, or is it the bottom? And the chances of it going up from here down, and even if you put it through those kind of filters, even if you're playing it safe at the moment, there is a chance we may have a layman's kind of, you know, problem. A company may just fall over somewhere and may have contagion somewhere. So there's always, because when you come at the back of these recessions, that's the kind of thing that happens. So we've got to be careful of that. We're not out of the woods. So now, tentative steps into the market, yes. But I mean, I still hold about 65-67% cash, I think, you know. So I'm still. I'm still holding back there, because I think we're going to see some volatile deals. But that's opportunity to me. You know, I mean, when you've got cash, those volatile deals, those big down days, like a 5% drop in the industry, those can be an opportunity now, you know? So there we are.
Agreed.
It's not if you're fully invested, it's a nightmare. So,
you should be doing what I'm doing there, Justin. You sound like an analyst.
Yeah, you would. Do you know what? I like the fact that you're disciplined, just holding on to cash, and you haven't bought anything recently. I'm quite, because I find it really hard not to buy something, you know?
The thing is sort of like, you know, just making sure it's that discipline, and that's the key. I mean, however you run your portfolio, whether it's through trading, whether it's through in value or GARP, or whether it's actually through asset allocation, whatever it is, if it works, stick to it. Don't go off piste. That would be my single most important message to private investors. If you think you're a flipping expert into areas you've never really tried, you will get smacked down hard, unless you're very lucky. And that'll be the worst scenario. If you are lucky, because then you'll think you're good at it, you'll put an extra bit of juice into it next time you do it, and then you will get smacked down big time. So is that a classic expression? Stick to your knitting. Yeah. You know, don't do things you're not suited to.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Cheers,
all right,
Paul. Speak next week.
Yeah, thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. Do you know, Alan?
Hello, Justin. I'm fine, thanks.
I was going to say, have a nice weekend then, but it seems to be moulded into one these days, isn't it? Everything, because you can't go out and do a lot outside. It's one big sort of weekend with a bit of work online, and it just moulds into one, doesn't it? It blurs into one.
Well, I have to say, it's been a pretty busy time, sort of weekdays for me, but at the weekends now, because as you say, you know, one blurs into another. I've done the decorating, I've done the garden, I've done the hedges, so I had an old motorcycle in the back of my garage that has been there since 2013. So I'm doing what's called a rattle can paint job. I've gone to Halfords and stood in the social distancing queue, got some cans of spray paint, and I've been spraying up the old bits of bodywork from this old bike. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm selling arse now. Right, anyway.
Yeah. Along with a few tinnies of beer as well, you know. It's just
When you've had too much, you start sort of shaking the can of beer at the motorbike, you know. So, all right, I got the wrong one in my hand there. Right, cool. All right, well, let's talk about stocks, Al. What's your thoughts? What's happening here? Anything happening?
Well, I think every time we come on here, just we talk about COVID stocks and this is going to go to the moon because this has happened and there's a possible COVID connotation. I'm now looking beyond this. I'm looking to companies that have growth potential in their own right.
Sustainable,
sustainable growth, which is what we are coming to the end of the first phase of this now. So we're going to get used to living with it or living with phase two or whatever. So I think we've now got to focus back on the economy and opportunities that exist out there in the market, which aren't COVID-2 related.
I do think, there'll be one, I don't know, not all of them will, but once they get these tests, these antibody tests, literally you can have a result within minutes. That if anyone cracks that, the thing. There's a couple of companies out there trying to do it, but I do think it'll come from a big guy, because you can't compete with these big guys at Roche and all that stuff, or AstraZeneca or GSK, because
they can
put the money into it, and they can just throw money at it, plenty of money at it, and they scale it very quickly,
Well, they also have all the connections with the universities, the spin-outs as well, and of course, it's well known that Oxford University are sort of probably blazing a trail in this regard, and of course Cambridge with AstraZeneca as well. It's there are well-known ties there between the two. So I think you're right. Yeah, and of course there are so many companies with possible solutions. I mean, we heard from Cat and Eye Innovation this morning. Their COVID ID app is progressing well. That's the JV with ZDN Group.
Hang on, you said you were not going to mention any COVID stuff.
No.
You're slipping one in.
But you raised it. but anyway.
No, you've started. You said, I'm not going to mention any COVID stocks. Then you started mentioning the COVID stock.
Okay. I've got COVID-itis. I can't.
I'm not going to mention any COVID stocks. There's some news I don't know because now this morning. Okay.
I can't turn away from the dark side.
Yeah. A lot of these have had fantastic rises. Some people have done very well on them, and well done to the guys who have got in there early. And if you're a trader and you're in and out of these stocks, that's the way to play it. But let's be honest, some of these stocks now, they've got done multi-bagged, they're triple digit, market cap. They've got to justify that with revenue, and so that comes along later. So I did a video actually yesterday on difference between sustainable rises and non-sustainable rises, and basically it's about value generation. And what is value? It's creating assets, basically assets, cash, building up the asset side of the balance sheet rather than the liability. Now a lot of these companies who talk about the potential, that's not actually growing value. What they do, they have to spend money, so in actual fact the liabilities are going up and the assets are going down until they come up with a commercial model in some way. And this is in respects of every company that's pre-revenue. If they're starting a drill campaign, if they're launching a clinical trials, then it's costing them money. The share price rises because of the potential to generate value, but until they start commercializing it, they're not actually generating value. They're just, there's the potential to generate value. That's the difference. If you want a sustainable rise, you invest in a company that actually, there's cash going to the bottom line and they're generating real value, value, as opposed to potential.
Absolutely. And my first company is one such company. The company is called Airtel Africa. The epic code is AAF.
AAF? Who are they then?
AAF. Yes, Airtel Africa. Well, they provide mobile telecoms and internet services to customers in Nigeria, East Africa, and also the rest of Africa. Approximately 100 million small, medium, and high usage customers, mobile data services, and so on. The company's just reported its ninth consecutive quarter of double-digit revenue growth. It announced that pre-tax profits have risen to $598 million from $348 million previously. Revenue $3.4 billion, up from just over $3 billion the year before. Customer base has grown 12%, and this company is just consistently growing. And, of course, it's growing into a fast-growing environment and a fast-growing growing economy. There's lots of anecdotal data looking at the growth in various countries in Africa, and of course Nigeria is one of the more advanced countries in that regard. Also, Ironically, because of COVID-19, the company's also noted a surge in internet traffic and also a surge in broadband subscription numbers. So the company itself, it came to market in June 2019, floated at 80p, and the share price hasn't really sort of retained that float price, apart from late last year, just on the back of the strong growth. And of course, it fell off a cliff earlier on this year with the COVID outbreak. But nonetheless, the company's currently got a value of $1.4 billion. It pays a healthy dividend, just under 13% currently, and is, if it can sustain this sort of growth, which given the market it's in, it's quite possible that will happen. This is a really, really strong company to invest in, and obviously it's in a continent which is still vastly underdeveloped, and internet services, mobile services are becoming ever more important as these services reach out into the more remote regions of the continent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the growth figures, but the thing is, it doesn't fit my filters because it's in Africa. I know that's a bad thing to say, but I always think jurisdiction, you should always be careful of jurisdiction, you know, and I suppose that's why it's not rallying, because what's the market cap then?
Well, the market cap's $1.4 billion, the numbers I've just given you. I mean, those are impressive numbers by any standards. $598 million of profit, up from $348 million previously, and that's on revenue of $3.4 billion. So really, it is very, very, very undervalued. It pays a large dividend yield of 13%, but you've got customer growth of 12%. Over the period, and I mean, you know, this is a company that is fast growing. Probably what's holding the share price back is the fact that it's in Africa, and of course there are sort of, you know, maybe corporate governance issues in some regions. But Airtel Africa is long established in the region, came to market, as I say, in June last year, and has powered ahead ever since. So at the moment, it's looking like an absolute steal at these prices.
Yeah. Because even if you look at the profit there, full years, so profit after tax, even if you go after tax, $408 million, and put that on a PE of 10, you know, $408 billion. What's that in pounds these days? £3 billion is the value of that. Yeah. So it's on a PE of 5 at the moment.
On numbers alone, there the company is ridiculously undervalued. But of course, we're in this market at the moment where true values and true growth potential or recovery potential isn't necessarily reflected. But I think this is a really strong play, and I think as the year progresses, we'll see that valuation gap close somewhat.
Yeah, cool. All right, Airtel AAF. Actually, doing research there. It's based in Africa, of course. Many people don't mind. You know, it's up them. It's you know, in my mind, you know, equities are risky. You don't need to take extra risk, and that's what I think. And so, because there's no such thing as a safe investment, but if you find one or close to one that gives good return, go for that rather than go for the dodgy, you know, risky one. And I'll say dodgy, but risky one, because you didn't give yourself extra risk. There's no need for it. You don't need to try. It's hard enough to, honestly, try and find yourself a safe, predictable investment. If you can do that, invest in it, because a lot of companies aren't safe or predictable. Cool. Anything else, Al? What's happening?
Okay, this one's closer to home. And again, this is also a real opportunity for growth recovery here. Company is called Capita CPI, obviously a long established firm in the outsourcing business.
Capita, are they still around, are they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Share price is currently 32p. Now, of course, this is down from a year high of £1.85 and previous highs of £4 or £5 prior to that.
If we look back on.
Yeah, that's right. It's just come down and down and down. That said, the company has been very proactive during the during the crisis. Directors have cut bonuses, but during the period, it's continued to renew contracts. And of course, a lot of the government contracts are outsourced to Capita. And with the automation, we discussed Blue Prism the other week. I'm going to touch on Blue Prism again in a second. But with the automation in this area now, Capita are extremely well placed to take advantage of that. So the companies, as I say, it's basically fallen from these levels. New Ministry of Justice contract worth 114 million, and a further contract win announced last week for 60 million. But the company continues to serve hundreds of businesses and hundreds of government departments every day of the week. And with these cost-cutting decisions at this level now, there are a number of pundits in the marketplace, and taking a closer look at the numbers, I do think that Capita does offer potential for a decent recovery play. How far it will recover, whether it can ever get back to year highs of £1.85, who knows? But even so, this company is currently worth 550 million sterling, and it continues to renew these contracts, sign up new contracts, and it's so entrenched in government, looking after government contracts and running departments for them, that it's hard to see that changing. And if anything, I would expect that to increase. So, I think as a recovery play, there are a number of options out there. I'm going to talk about some more next week in the financial sector. But the fact is that they responded quickly to the crisis. The directors have cut their bonuses, and the company continues to win these contracts. And we're still here just off year lows. The company just touched 20p briefly, and here we are now at 32p, having been at 185 earlier in the year. I do think that as the market recovers, that will be reflected in the Capita share price.
There's one thing you're not mentioning here, Al, is there? We've been in this situation before with this kind of company.
Yeah, but the difference is the company is continuing to win contracts, and it doesn't have huge unsustainable levels of debt.
Well, it's the first time you mentioned the debt, though. Debt is a huge issue here. First of all, the end of year, they made a loss. Their net debt is 50% bigger than the actual valuation. And do you know what? Most companies go through out the back of a recession. So most companies go through because of debt. And so this is a highly risky play, especially in times we're in. I mean, we haven't had the financial fallout yet. Times will get harder for businesses. We haven't even started yet. We're still on life support. We haven't got the machines off us. Once we get off life support, then you'll start seeing businesses fall over. And companies with massive debt, above their eyeballs in debt, in fact, underwater here, and making a loss means they can't service that debt, are one of the first few companies to go through. We've done this with Thomas Cook. How many other? What other companies have been we talked about that have gone through? Loads of them, because they can't service that debt, essentially.
There's a difference, though, Jess. The Capita's got 450 million of liquidity at its last set of results, and it also has access to a further 450 million of liquidity. So versus the current market cap of 550 million, that's liquidity of nearly 900 million. So it does actually have access to that, and the fact is that it's taken action to cut its costs, the directors cut bonuses, and so on. So I do think Capita is well positioned.
But that liquidity comes at a cost, doesn't it?
Well, it's a revolving credit facility, and it's currently drawn down on just 150 million of that. So it has plenty of headroom still. And as I say, the company continues to win the contracts, and it will no doubt take additional cost-cutting measures if necessary going forward. Remembering that what the company is servicing here are salaries and other costs. It doesn't have to service the cost of running an airline, the cost of maintaining a fleet, all of those huge fixed costs that companies like, for instance, Thomas Cook had. So actually, the company is, I believe, very well placed to get out of the current recession. And again, there are a number of brokers that support that view.
Well, they would, because they're the brokers. Current liabilities, right? $2.3 billion. Current assets, $1.1 billion. So, you know, double the amount of current liabilities assets. I'm just saying, you know, there's enough risk out there in equities. I just think if people want to play with high risk odds, go for it. But I mean, you try and find yourself a safe investment, and that's the way forward. I think why mess around with a company indebted, making a loss and indebted? These companies are essentially drowning. You know, you're trying to jump in with them and say, "Well, we'll survive this." You don't need to get inside a speedboat with the company doing well.
Buy a COVID-19 stock.
Yeah, I'm just worried. People have to be aware of debt. I'm not saying this won't, some good news won't make the share price rise. I'm just saying you've got to make people aware of the amount of debt this company's in, because a lot of people on Twitter as well will be talking about this company, talking about the revenue, talking about the market cap. And they've failed to mention this one bit of debt. And I see that as misrepresentation. And I see it very opaque. And it's not being transparent. And I just fear that people, I suppose, listen, it's their fault. If people invest without doing proper due diligence, proper research up to them.
But, always saying how much,
I've seen this over and over again on Twitter. People talking about the revenue of a company and all this stuff and the market cap. And they failed to mention the debt, debt is a big issue, a really big issue that should be mentioned. But anyway, CPI, do your own research, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, just following on from that, I mentioned Blue Prism earlier. We spoke about Blue Prism on the podcast recently. Again, the share price on that has remained very solid. But the company was also featured in the Mail on Sunday. Chairman and chief exec Jason Kingdon was interviewed, and he was just looking at the market and really how AI is going to play an increasingly important role in the handling of huge contracts such as the contracts that Capita looks after going forward, and this is these are the changes that the Capita are making. So I think Blue Prism are obviously at the forefront of that with their technology, but their technology is being utilised by firms like Capita to run these contracts, and you know we're at a point now where the companies will need to change and evolve to meet that. And given that Capita is actually entrenched and is the go-to company to get these contracts executed and looked after, also Capita has access and will use the AI technology put out there by companies such as Blue Prism. So I do think the bull case is very strong. There is the debt there for sure. The company has headroom for sure. That's fine. But I think it's selling into a market that has much more potential now than, say, well, Thomas Cook, for example, with the airline business. And I mean, goodness me, just imagine if Thomas Cook had still been around ahead of the COVID crisis. You know, that would have been it.
Exact same argument on Eddie Stobart, and the reason it's a good reason why the share price is down there. Same with Eddie Stobart, it's a good reason why it's fallen off a cliff, because it's got debt above their head and they're making a loss. And I just think that combination is quite risky, that's all. That's what I'm saying. It's very high risk.
I think we
had this argument with Thomas Cook many a time, and I said, Al, if people are happy putting their money into Thomas Cook when you could get an RNS tomorrow saying the company is shut, it's gone into liquidation. That could happen with these companies overnight, And if you look at a balance sheet that's strong, that won't happen to a company overnight with a company that's got liquidity there, it's got its current assets rather than current liabilities. So and that's why I just think you take your chance with these companies, that's all. And, be aware that debt can sink a company very quickly overnight. And that's it,
You're absolutely right, Justin. And I think it also comes down to risk appetite as well. What's your risk appetite like? Are you prepared to take a look at situations like this where potentially the recovery could be huge, the company could start paying a dividend again, given where it is? Or do you think the debt is unsustainable, won't be restructured, and are they selling into a debt market? Those are sort of assessments you have to make. Some people will become comfortable with that decision. Others will be risk averse and so will look elsewhere.
Yeah, I just think, you know, like, keep it simple, really. You know, you don't need to take on companies with debt. There's plenty of companies out there with not debt, with the growing profits and revenue, good balance sheets, strong balance sheets. It's like Warren Buffett says, you know, it's not like Olympic diving investing. You don't get points for difficulty. You know, keep it simple. It just gets really complex when you've got a lot of sort of debt going around and trying to rescue that debt in some way. Anyway, anything else?
Just very quickly. Well, to come right on the other end of the spectrum and look at UltraSafe, we have spoken about this fund many times before, but I'm a real fan, and it had a fall off recently. And anyone that had the foresight to jump in when the stock price dipped below, or the fund price dipped below £1.10, would have done very well. The company's Bluefield Solar Income Fund, BSIF, is the epic code. Shares have traded as high as 145p and dipped briefly, as I say, to 105p. The company's trading currently at a 16% premium to net asset value, but it also pays a dividend of 5.8% every year. The company, as the name would imply, it's a fund. It's based in Guernsey, and it's a renewable energy fund invested into over 50 large solar assets throughout the UK. As its UK has negligible forex exposure, a large chunk of the shares are held by institutions, and the fund also attained the Guernsey Green Fund status in April 2019, and there's a pretty strict criteria for qualifying for that. So, as I say, if you been watching this one and managed to get in on the COVID dip, you'd have done very well indeed. But it's come straight back, and it's come back to roughly halfway between its year low and year high. So at this level, I think it offers it's a steady investment. It's a steady Eddie. It's not a spectacular performer, but you can put your money in here. You're investing green, and you're also getting a dividend in the process. What's not to like?
Yes, exactly. What's not like, indeed? Well, you know what? It's a funny thing, actually. It is hard to find a safe investment. If you do find a safe investment, it's an investment worth going, because it's maybe not exciting, but, you know, a lot of these companies, it's a false economy. These people you see tweeting out these companies, and they boom one day and bust the next, because you'll find if you keep doing that, you keep, you know, catching the wrong end of it, the wrong end of the trade sometimes. And when it all comes down to it, if you look at the end of the year portfolio, probably, unless you've timed these spectacularly well, you know, you're probably better off just getting a steady eddy that just climbs gradually, you know, over the time, and probably do well.
Very much so. To that end, probably if you're looking for a steady eddy stock, the best stock over the past few years, I think, for dividend, for growth, and for just for a steady performance, has been AstraZeneca. It's been phenomenal. Mm. It really has.
Do you know what? It's funny. I've been trying to get one of those biggie sort of, pharma companies in my portfolio. But so apart from that, you know, a dash for cash, the sell-off we had recently, they've bounced back. The GSKN, AZN, you know.
I mean, AZN was trading around 70 quid at the time, and I think it dipped to about 68 quid, and then it's just gone flying back, and it touched £90 a share last week. And I mean, I picked that up a couple of years ago, 40 quid a share, so it's just a real steady eddy. But I sold out, but it's just a great company, great British company, and continues to perform. But we'll talk about that another day.
Mm. How many stocks do you hold at the moment? How much are you in cash?
I am two-thirds in and a third out. So I've gone on a bit more. I've got a spread. I've got probably about 20 stocks at the moment, so too many. And I will start selling some of them down. But I've just taken positions. And I've also picked up some of these recovery stocks. I do hold Capita. I have picked up some Capita. Also picked up some Lloyds too. I think there's a strong recovery potential in the banks. And Barclays, I got Barclays when I hit the lows recently. These are all companies at multi-year lows. And a similar thing happened during the credit crunch with the banks, of course, and they did recover. So you know, there are strong recovery plays across the FTSE at the moment. But we'll talk more about those next week.
Yeah, absolutely. No, Lloyds and Barclays. Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, they're going to be around, aren't they? In 5-10 years, and probably a lot higher than they are now. So it's just, you know, who knows the timing of it? But that's what I'm saying. There are businesses, a good business run at the moment, that have multi-year lows. You know, but
yeah.
And there's the banks of some of them. Marvelous stuff. Cheers for Al, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Sir Jess. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Fairpoint Group. And they're, of course, in the administration business, insolvency business, which is going to be quite busy, I think, over the next few years. And it's worth looking at some of those companies. At four, Arkel Resources. By the way, Fairpoint's up 3.6% to 128.5. Arkel Resources is at four. It's a 0.975 is the pence, down 13.33%. At three, BT Group. We talked about these on the podcast. I'm not sure. I've taken a little stake in BT. I'm not sure. Their metrics aren't that good, but it's at a 5-year low. The CEO just bought 2 million shares last week, 2 million quid's worth of shares, that is. And now he owns 4 million quid's worth of shares. He's got a lot of money, but they've got to do something with the business, you know, because it's been going down and down for like, what, 4 years now? An all-time low, and they got rid of the last CEO 2 years ago because of this, or a year and a half ago. So they got to sort it out. Okay, at two, Amiga Diagnostics, down 4.5% at 52.5, and at one, Avacta Group, and that's what, up 9% at 150.5. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Jangada Mines, drilling results from Pitubiras North Target. At four, Centamin, annual reports, results for the year, ended 31st December. At three, Cora Gold, final results. At two, Fast Forward Innovations, investee company update, rehumor and board changes. And at one, Open Orphan, update on antibody tests and share price movement. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.